Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. And for today, we are looking at the budget which was given by Minister Tito Mboweni on Wednesday afternoon. For today, we thought that we would focus on two of the big issues that had been anticipated and that the minister actually touched on, and that's the issue of taxes together with the issue of energy. Joining us, we have quite an educated panel today. We've got Rea Betswe Moloi, yes, who is an attorney from Tax Consulting SA. Rea Betswe, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And she's going to be, you know, running us through some of the tax implications. And then we've also got Neil Cornelius, who is a managing director at global consulting firm Berkeley Research Group, joining us from London to discuss the energy issues. Neil, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think I'll just start with Rea Betswe here in studio, just to understand taxes were a big issue. We were anticipating that perhaps there might be some tax increases on the personal income tax side, but more consensus was we might see an increase in VAT, but you know, none of that.
Yeah, definitely.
None of that happened. So your thoughts on what happened yesterday?
Yeah, so I mean, generally, I think it was quite generous.
Yeah.
In the sense that, of course, we all thought that there were going to be increases in personal income tax, in VAT and corporate tax. And I mean, considering the fact that these comprise of 80% of the collections that SARS gets from. So it was just a huge shock to us that, you know, these there were no increases in respect of, you know, the corporate tax, VAT and personal income tax. You know, and especially for individuals, I think they're jumping and screaming right now because I'm sure they thought that they were going to get hit the hardest, of course, with not only personal income tax, but also VAT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Neil, I just want to switch over to you because the other much anticipated issue that was expected in that budget was the issue of Eskom, you know, the struggling power utility. What were your thoughts just around some of the measures and things that the minister talked about?
Well, there were two primary elements within the budget speech itself, but the budget speech needs to be seen in the context of the state of the recent State of the Nation speech, and also the integrated resource plan that the budget gives effect to. So just talking generally on those issues, the budget has set aside money for the next year and over the next 10 years for the restructuring of Eskom to improve the way that that organization operates. That is obviously necessary in terms of resolving some of the issues that are affecting the South African power sector and the knock-on impact across the wider economy. There's also specifically in the budget a mention that financially performing municipalities will be allowed to purchase power from independent power producers, so non-ESCOM power generators. That kind of flows on from measures announced in the State of the Nation speech, which kind of widened the net of potential providers of power generation within South Africa. So the State of the Nation address mentioned making it easier for major energy consumers to have power generation on their own premises to meet their own consumption. also mentioned accelerating the contracting for additional renewables that are a pretty cost competitive option these days, obviously have climate change benefits and also increase the availability of power that's available, and also mentioned the municipalities. Looking across those range of options, that would seem to make it potentially really interesting for some of the major power consumers within South Africa to look at developing their own on-site generation. The independent power producers, it's more difficult because for municipalities to be able to buy power from independent power producers, those power producers have to exist. And in order to exist, they have to have been financed. And from an external investor's perspective at the moment, looking at the municipalities and the limited financial track record and track record of being able to sell them power, actually being able to finance new power in the expectation of selling to municipalities might be quite difficult. So it's kind of, you can see the direction of travel, which is opening up the possibilities of power generation within South Africa. The actual rules required to enable different types of participants to be involved are pretty complex and will need to evolve. And there will be certainly be some issues that need to be solved in order to fully open up the options that are available.
Roberto, I want to bring you in because as a tax expert, you know, these cuts and increases on taxes when it comes to, he was very specific about the ciders, about the cigars, about the Hubbly Bubbly, which I know a lot of people around the country were like, what, Hubbly Bubbly? Do you think he's going to be able to raise enough money? Because Neil is raising a lot of issues that Eskom has to, that have to be funded by Eskom. But I find that, you know, the things that Neil is saying, these sound like it's a moving target, right? No, so will it? Are they going to raise enough to be able to address, I guess, Eskom's issues and anything else just from whatever they've been, all the little levies that they're throwing on?
Yeah, so, I mean, based on its stint taxes, obviously, I mean, I think they look at how the how consumers spend, how much they spend on, you know, things like, you know, your cigars, your alcohol, which in South Africa, I imagine that, you know, you can see that we spend a lot on those types of things, you know, alcohol and, you know, cigarettes and Hubbly Bubbly, the new phenomenon. But another thing that that was raised was that with personal income tax, so from tax residents who are living and working abroad, South African tax expats, so for them, before there was a limit to the exemption that was supposed to be taking effect, that's going to take effect on the 1st of March. And the limit was going to be 1 million rands. So any income, foreign employment income that they earn that's above 1 million rands would then be taxed, right? And so what they saw is that a lot of South African expats were trying to find ways in, you know, alleviating their tax burden or alternatively seizing their tax residency, right? And when and when they seize their tax residency, it means that they no longer can enjoy any form of, you know, benefits or a form of income that comes from these expats. So what they've done is they've increased the limit to 1.25 million, hoping that they can keep those particular, you know, expats that fall within that limitation. And what they've also done is they've limited the, they've restricted the form of the way that South African expats can actually seize their tax residency. So before, and what's currently available to them now is if you're a South African expat living and working abroad and you have that permanent intention to remain outside of South Africa and therefore you generally just don't have ties, maybe you have property here, a bank account, etc. You could financially immigrate and basically confirm your you seizing your tax residency and confirming that particular intention. So the National Treasury have decided that they're going to do away with financial immigration. So now it becomes more cumbersome on that particular taxpayer that wants to seize tax residency. And therefore, what does that do? It keeps them within the system, right? And they remain tax residents. And because these are the individuals that earn significant amounts of money, because they earn in foreign currencies, and on top of that, they, you know, there are a lot of allowances that they get in respect of their foreign employment income. So, you know, what they're going to be kept, and they're going to be kept in the particular, you know, being tax residents, and they have to find, it's going to be more difficult for them to seize tax residency, and, you know, from that particular, you know, pool of income earning individuals, they can get quite a significant portion from them in terms of collections.
But will it be enough to address Eskom, SAA?
Probably not. Saving Eskom is going to take, I don't know, it's going to take a significant amount of time. It's not something that can happen in a year. And if, you know, the National Treasury continues to possibly, you know, see, work for the future and make decisions regarding the future, and not just decide to, okay, we're increasing the tax brackets, for example. And whereas this year, they decided that they're actually going to increase the tax brackets above inflation.
Yeah.
You know, so it's something that's going to take time. It's not something that's going to take, you know, a year's worth of collections. Taxes. Definitely.
Neil, it sounded like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment in terms of the level of financial strain on the government coming from the from Eskom, which is that if a number of the measures that have been announced, so major consumers being able to establish generation on their own site, independent power producers being able to establish generation and sell to the more financially stable municipalities, because of their power generation and because of the payments to these non-ESCOM forms of power generation, that will take away from the revenue stream of ESCOM. If you look at the integrated resource plan, the ESCOM is being asked to contract for or ensure that there is sufficient generation available to meet a level of demand in a number of years' time, which is very uncertain because the South African economy has basically flatlined for 10 years. And because of the link between electricity consumption and economic activity, that's meant that basically electricity demand has flatlined. However, in anticipation of successfully growing the economy again, Eskom is being asked to plan for and contract for an expectation of demand growth at, depending on what scenario you look at, 3 or 4% per annum going forward. And the actual realized demand growth is going to be fairly uncertain. So there are circumstances where a lump of demand goes to own generators and independent power producers, and when demand growth is lower than expected, the Eskom may be contracting for capacity, which is not required on the timescales that they are anticipating that it will be required. And both of those circumstances can put additional strain on the finances of Eskom. So I think there will be, although a sum of money has been put aside in the budget for the restructuring of Eskom, what will actually be required is subject to a material degree of uncertainty.
Neil, just as a follow-up, you know, Sowetan residents have actually called for 150 rand flat rate for power. Do you see any? Will it work? Could it work? Could it hold water? Is that something that could actually help? Would they be able to, I guess, collect enough as Eskom?
In structuring your charging system within any power system, you have a trade-off between two factors. One is that the actual costs of supplying electricity to a consumer are kind of a very complex formula because the cost of supplying power varies according to location, time of day, and also in the new context with people having options of, for instance, installing solar photovoltaics on their roof, you need to try to get the economics right of the tariffs that you are asking people to pay. Otherwise, they will end up choosing what are, from an overall perspective, the wrong options. So you have this very complex requirement to try to reflect the complex economics of the power system in the charging structure that you offer customers, but you also want to make it as simple as possible from their perspective so that they're able to react to it. Given that a flat rate doesn't provide a lot of the signals that you might want to provide, for instance, reducing the consumption of electricity at the time of peak demand, because that consumption increases your need for investment in generation, transmission, distribution, etc. So it's a good thing if people use electricity less at those times, even if that means that they use more electricity at other times. So a flat rate has the advantage of simplicity, but it has a number of challenges in terms of the realities and the economics of the power system. And one of the things that you want to do is to get customers to adapt their behaviour where it's appropriate in order to reduce the costs imposed on the overall power system.
Okay. Following on from, trying to make things simpler for consumers, because 150 Rand is sort of a, finally people are saying, or at least they're paying something. I guess that's one way to look at it. But I want to, look at the tax issues in isolation for a moment. He gave a couple of examples. You know, the teacher will be able to, have, I think they said 3,000
Rand,
extra, for the year, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Is it enough, for an individual? Because if you divide your 3,000 Rand by the 12 months, you'd hardly have even the 150.
the
150 plus a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess left over. Was it that deep the way,
So, I mean, in as much as there are these, forms of relief, basically, to the individual, it's probably not enough.
Yeah.
Because of inflation and because of the fact that, people aren't earning a lot of money, but the reliefs are coming in the form of, the increase in the tax brackets, of course, the rebates, and also for those lower income earning individuals. So now they will not be required to pay taxes on if they are earning about 83,000, just over 83,000 per annum.
Yeah.
So, and compared to last year, it was 79,000, and there's also the tax savings as well. Those have been, increased. The tax savings account has been increased by a further 3,000 rands.
Yeah.
But, in the bigger scheme of things, it's probably not enough. It's just to basically ensure that what SARS is trying to do is basically broaden the amount of people that they can get taxes from in one tax bracket, for example. So, for example, if there were people that were earning 205, just over 205,000, they now fall into the first tax into first income tax brackets, and because of the fact that there are a number of the majority of income earning individuals in South Africa earn between 80,000 to about 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So by ensuring that they can at least get the most, even if it's not a lot, but they can capture a lot more income taxpayers in the respective brackets and get more tax out of them. It's for them, it's a benefit for them. But for the consumer, it's for the ordinary consumer that's just earning to live by, the fact that there hasn't been a VAT increase, for example, that will also, it doesn't alleviate them. It still places them in the same position, especially considering if they don't get any, increases in income. It's really, I think the most people that would possibly benefit this the most are the people that can make the necessary investments, like, putting in tax-free savings account, the higher income earning individuals.
Do you think South African consumers would have a problem if, right now we're playing in the realm of speculation simply because the budget happened yesterday already, right? So we can't change what happened yesterday. But do you think South Africans would have had a problem if Minister Mboweni said, okay, we're not doing a VAT increase, etc., but we're now doing a levy, right? 1% of everyone's taxable income will go towards Eskom, full stop. Like, do you think South African consumers would have had a problem with that? SAA, I would have a problem, but Eskom.
On top of personal income tax that they're paying,
yes.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, think of yourself. I think for myself as well.
Yeah.
Because if you're already collecting, money from me, in respect of my income, and then you want to enforce another form of levy, that's less money in my pocket, less disposable income, less opportunities for me to save. So definitely, there would be up in arms.
Mm. The flip side of that is obviously that you have to fix Eskom. The impact on the South African economy of the current situation of Eskom is pretty serious.
Neil, I just want to get your thoughts, because one of the things that's interesting about us talking right now is the fact that myself and Rhea Bates, we were in South Africa, right? But you are in London. When you are looking at the minister's speech from yesterday and these plans around Eskom, you're looking at it from sort of, I guess, an outside-in point of view, even though we know that as Berkeley, you guys do have a presence. From the London side, I guess an international view, is it enough to sort of quell, I guess, whatever international angst there might be around South Africa? Are the minister's statements around energy enough to quell whatever concerns the international community has just around South Africa?
On the basis of what has been seen to date, I would expect there to be ongoing issues around power supply within South Africa. I think it will take a while to be able to put in place the arrangements to make some of the measures that have been announced work effectively. And there are, from my perspective, ongoing challenges within the South African energy sector that will take some time to resolve. So I would not read the budget speech and think, okay, this is solved.
Yeah.
So Mudira, if I can just add, you know, I think another issue is that with taxpayers, they want to see the return.
Yes.
Right? On the taxes that they are paying.
Yeah.
So if, for example, we continue trying, we're basically bailing out Eskom, we're basically bailing out SAA, but there's nothing changing. It seems like, you know, the situation is getting worse. Of course, as a taxpayer, you know, it would be much more difficult for you to actually want to pay an extra levy to bail out Eskom, you know. Yeah. So I think it's not only related to, you know, how much you're being taxed, but also related to what is the change, what is the difference that is, you know, taking place. It's just what we want to see as individuals as well, because what we've noted from the South African expats is that, you know, if they were somehow benefiting, if things were getting better, you know, in South Africa with, you know, the taxes being contributing taxes towards the country, of course, they'd be more than happy, you know, to contribute. However, it seems like things are deteriorating instead of increasing, instead of becoming better. So, you know, it's just all about, you know, if I'm paying this much of taxes towards bailing out Eskom, for example, what are the changes that are taking place?
I'm reluctant to add additional bad news because you've got the integrated resource plan, because of the requirements to run expensive diesel-fired generation to limit the load shedding. Over the next few years, there's an anticipation that electricity prices will have to be higher. And so either electricity prices are higher or those costs are not passed through to the tariffs, and that will worsen the financial position of Eskom.
No. This thing is it's quite a deep one. Because it's so hard to run away, you know, from Eskom, simply because, you know, as a taxpayer, rightly as you said, the fact that you can't have a tax debate right now in South Africa without talking Eskom.
Yeah.
And you can't have an energy debate without talking about taxes, because it's all sort of interlinked. So as we come to the end of the discussion, Neil, can I just get your outlook? You've already said that energy is going to be such a tough issue to solve in the short term. I guess, what's your outlook? Do you anticipate that the implementation, at least, of the plan will go accordingly, or will the minister's statements around Eskom simply be just another good plan that was failed to be implemented in the end?
My expectation is that the measures will be implemented. If for some of them, it will take time. Because there are complexities around kind of the legal frameworks, market frameworks, et cetera, that are required to make parts of it possible or effective. But I think that the situation has got sufficiently serious such that actions will be taken. The question is the effectiveness of the actions that are taken and how long it takes to move ESCOM from where it is into, or the overall power sector actually, from where it is into a better position from everybody's perspective.
Okay. And then, Rebetswe, I'll allow you to have the final say. Do you anticipate, I guess, from a tax point of view, that, you know, the plans will be implemented as, you know, as planned? And also the issue of internationals and expats that you're talking about. Do you anticipate that South Africans living abroad will comply?
I mean, we always advise them to comply.
Of course.
But, you know, really, just really, SARS just, it's a matter of, you know, if they're going to state something, it has to stay that way, you know. You know, it will probably change next year. For example, for the exemption, it will probably change next year. They might just decide to bring it back down and see that, oh, we still have these expats still, you know, being tax residents.
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, the what they have said to be implemented, you know, it's also just a matter of, you know, seeing how things go in the year. If for them they think that it works, of course, it might be of benefit to the taxpayers next year, because they might decide to, you know, further alleviate the individual's tax burden.
Yeah.
So and from an international an expat tax perspective, is that, you know, for them, they just want a way, they don't want to have to pay taxes towards a country that they're seeing as, you know, there's nothing, you know, happening. You know, there's no improvement whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's as if, you know, if they're going to be paying taxes towards the country, I mean, there should be some form of improvement. And for them, they don't want to do that if that's not going to be the case, if the funds are going to continue to be misused.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they can't get a tax alleviation somehow, then, you know, they would want to just, you know, seize their tax residency in South Africa and remain abroad and remain tax residents in where they are working and living.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of today's discussion. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Neil just telling us that things have become so dire on the Eskom and energy front that he anticipates that the plans will be implemented as such. There have been a lot of good plans around energy power distribution in South Africa for many decades, but the problem has always been implementation. But he's saying that things are so dire now that we're likely to see implementation actually coming through as planned. He's also highlighting the fact that the energy crisis is not something that's going to be fixed anytime soon, and we just hope that the government is able to do what they need to do on that end. And then we have Rebetswe telling us that as taxpayers, we need to see some results before we decide that we're going to be paying any more money, especially if there is perhaps a levy just to go and bail out the National Power Utility. Also talking about the fact that despite the fact that there were no tax increases, South African consumers are continuously strained, and, you know, putting any other pressure on them right now is just not going to be a thing. She does end off by saying that one must pay their taxes. You must comply.
Please comply.
Please comply.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Ordinarily, a conversation between a journalist or slash financial writer, a tax expert, and an energy expert should not be happening. But in the context of South Africa, it's really become a reality. And I think today's discussion really underscores how intersectional the issue of energy has really become in South Africa. Because as a taxpayer, back in the day, you know, running... taxpayer money has always been used to, I guess, subsidize some of the operations of state-owned enterprises and the like. But things in South Africa have become so dire that as a taxpayer, you sort of start feeling like a shareholder in the National Power Utility. And I think those are some of the things that were highlighted in today's discussion. What I find particularly fascinating was how you have someone like Neil, who is sitting in London, being able to come to grips with some of the intricacies and the issues just around Eskom and what needs to be done, I guess, even on a municipal level, right? And it begs the question whether locally we really understand what's going on. But more importantly, it also shines a light on how the international community is paying attention on what's going on in South Africa and how much they actually understand the mess that the country is in just around this energy issue. One of the things that I like that came out of the discussion was how Rhea Betswe was just highlighting that in South Africa, the consumers so strained that there was very little room to be adding any more personal income taxes or VAT, stuff like that. But what is, I'm going to use the word interesting for this, is that you still have a population that doesn't want to be taxed or feels like it can't be taxed anymore, but will likely be forking out more to the government in the form of the sin taxes that are going to be levied on the alcohol, on the cigarettes, on Hubli, on wine, and the rest of the products that were named on that list. So very clever, very astute way of handling the business of collecting more revenues from South Africa that I think came out from the budget speech. Sin tax is something that people are going to keep. It's sort of inelastic goods. People will keep buying the alcohol. People will keep, you know, smoking the cigarettes. It's not something that's going to actually deter some the actual demand. We might see a slight dip, but after some time, people will adjust. So that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you to everyone who was listening. That was us with Neil Cornelius, who is Managing Director for global consulting firm that is Berkeley Research Group, together with Rhea Betswe Moloi, who is an attorney with Tax Consulting SA. So remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can also review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. So that's been it. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.